Welcome to the NJA podcast. I'm talking today with Professor Louise Cullen, who is a preeminent staff specialist and emergency physician at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital. Hello, Louise. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kate.
You've done some excellent research on IMPACT, which is an accelerated diagnosis protocol for chest pain. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Over a number of years, there's been a team of us here in Brisbane that have been investigating strategies to improve the care of patients who come to the emergency department with chest pain and other symptoms that might possibly be an acute coronary syndrome. And IMPACT is our latest strategy designed to try and improve the care of such patients.
Okay. I spoke recently with your colleague Will Parsonage about the ADAPT trial. What's the difference between IMPACT and ADAPT?
So ADAPT was an observational trial that was designed to test really a strategy that identified low-risk patients that we could safely move out of the hospital into the ambulatory care setting and have objective testings such as exo-stress testings as an outpatient. And ADAPT was able to verify that this particular strategy using the TIMI score and troponin testing and ECGs could identify about 1 in 5 patients as low-risk. IMPACT's quite different to that, though. So IMPACT was an interventional trial where we actually changed the care that we were providing to patients, of course, fully consented in a trial. And we had a couple of aims in here. Firstly, we believe and still believe that there's a number of people that are being over-investigated, investigated unnecessarily for coronary artery disease when they come to the emergency department. And so we wanted to identify a low-risk cohort of patients in whom we could do some provisional investigations, troponin testing, ECGs, and risk stratify them, in whom we did not need to refer on to have any further testing, either as an inpatient or as an outpatient. And equally, we wanted to see the much larger problem for us is a big group of people who are at sort of intermediate risk. So about 1 in 50 of such patients we know have an acute coronary syndrome, but they make up, you know, the vast majority of people coming to the emergency department. So we want to see whether for intermediate risk patients we could actually accelerate their care as well and improve the efficiency of the assessment process for them. We actually found out overall is by combining sort of the low risk and intermediate risk these strategies, 3 out of every 4 people now under IMPACT are eligible for accelerated assessment.
With what implications for emergency burden, for example?
Well, it's got significant implications both for the emergency departments but also for the hospital and health services as well. So with our new low-risk strategy, which we found was just under 20% of our patients, we don't need to do further testing. So we've had an absolute reduction in testing in that for those people, which has, of course, given us back some capacity to assess other people, you know, as required. But more significantly, the nearly 60% of people who are intermediate risk, for those people, we were able to improve or shorten the duration of troponin testing, blood testing, and then follow this by an inpatient stress test. And we're able to get these people home significantly earlier than traditional care actually provided. So the median length of stay for our intermediate risk patients that include the whole assessment process, exercise stress test included, you know, was 7.5 hours by comparison to, you know, our previous research, which showed that it was nearly a full 24 hours those patients required to stay for testing.
Which is a significant amount of less anxiety for the patient as well as...
Oh, most definitely. I think, you know, what patients, when they come to hospital, and, you know, all credit to the fantastic public service and public health announcements such as that by the Heart Foundation, early warning of symptoms of a heart attack campaign, people are acutely aware of what sorts of things they need to be careful about and to seek medical advice for. And our job really should be to efficiently and quickly alleviate that fear if we can, or diagnose them so we can put them on the right strategy for care. So improving, you know, time is not only of benefit to ourselves as a hospital service, but equally to patients that therefore get back to their regular jobs and their lives at a, you know, at a reasonable time frame.
Let's look forward a little bit. What further research needs to be done, or what comes next in terms of implementing this protocol more widely?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different components. So in terms of implementation, my team here have been fortunate in securing some implementation funding from the Queensland Government through the Health Innovation Unit. And we've begun already to roll out impact across Queensland Health, and we've got five hospitals where this is the strategy of assessment process currently, with a number of others that are just around the corner. In terms of other research, though, this space still requires some more effort, energy and funding, really, because I still think that there's people that we probably can stop testing. But at the moment, there's no good evidence out there that is convincing and reassuring as to which patients we can do no further testing in. But I do think that at this point in time, we've probably still are a little bit too conservative in our approach. But we need good information before we can change clinical practice. We actually need some really good research to show us truly which are the patients that we can stop doing more stress testing, coronary CT angiography, for example, and things like that. So that's where I think we need to progress next.
Is it possible to further stratify the patients when they come in?
Yeah, I think so. But and I think that, though, to convince clinicians to change from what we know is a safe process, whereby the vast majority still get testing, to something which is saying, look, we're not going to do any more testing, we need a good study that will actually show us that that is clinically safe, appropriate for the patients, before I think we can shift away from what is standard care at this point in time.
Because it's a cultural shift, isn't it, really?
It is. It is. Disappointingly, I think we find that a lot of the funding goes to the newest drug, the latest technology, the newest this. And we really need investment in health services research, which is designed to look at things, you know, all of our strategies, adapt and impact, no new technology, same tests, different strategies of applying them, different risk stratification. You know, we need funding to focus on what we don't do. Rather than what we do, but it's very hard to compete. It's not as sexy as saying we've got the latest new drug for this or the latest piece of equipment for that. You know, this is the sort of thing which is a different way of thinking and sometimes just doesn't get funded as well.
And you're asking people to be, in a sense, less conservative.
That's exactly right. Right. We have worked with QUT and looked at the health economics in around this strategy as well, because I think one of the key things when we think about changing clinical practice, it actually, I think, requires investment to do it well. And as I said, without the investment from the Health Innovation Unit through Queensland Health, I don't think we would have got the traction that we did for the original ACRE project, nor the traction now that's building for impact as well. So I think the metrics that we've got both here in terms of clinical safety, along with the health economic data as well, hopefully provides some convincing information to people that it is safe and it is sensible to move into, you know, changing practice.
Thanks, Louise. I really appreciate your time.
No troubles at all, Kate. Thanks again.